Hello, America, and all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me as always is Teresa Sammons and Chris Logi. Say hi, guys.
Hey.
Hello.
Yeah. So, the big news this week is, well, you know exactly what it is we're going to be talking about. It's the freaking impeachment trial. The second impeachment trial, I should say. He became the first president to be impeached twice. And, well, you'll find out. Should I say spoiler alert or something? Because we all know what happened.
Yeah, we do by now.
And we all kind of expected that was going to happen, too. I mean, yep. Let's be honest. Deep down, you knew this. There was only one way this could end.
Yep.
That kind of dominated the news cycle this week, but it wasn't the only thing that happened. Pretty much that was, like, the only major, like, political thing that happened this week. But in the world of entertainment, we definitely had some things that happened, including one semi-popular cast member from The Mandalorian getting dropped after getting on that bullshit and staying on that bullshit, even though she'd been warned like a couple of times beforehand by the mouse himself that if she kept on this bullshit, they were going to drop her.
Suck around and find out.
Yeah. We also, speaking of the mouse is getting ready to drop one of their animation studio houses. And it's actually one that, honestly, had kind of been living on borrowed time anyway, to be completely honest. But we'll explain that in a little bit. And of course, there was also the Super Bowl that happened last week. That was the, and of course, as far as the, you know, that's concerned, we all knew who was going to win again. Because him being on that team basically means another freaking Super Bowl win, and I once again am denied the pleasure of seeing Tom Brady collapse to his knees in anguish again. So maybe next year?
Maybe
next year, yeah. And then, of course, and there's also a bunch of the trailers that came out during the Super Bowl, because it's the most expensive and most lucrative advertising part of the year, next to Christmas, of course. But anyway, before we get to all that stuff, let's do what we always do. Chris, what have you been up to this week?
Dealing with the fucking cold weather. These past few days. Don't think we've been above freezing. So that's kind of been the past couple weeks here, and it doesn't seem like it's going to get too much better here. So that has been fun. Luckily, not too much snow, especially not like what they're getting in the Pacific Northwest. Where their electricity is out in a lot of places. But yeah, I've been watching some stuff. Watched the new To All the Boys. I think it's called subtitle Always and Forever. It's the third of the movies. Good stuff. Basically, both of the kids are senior year, trying to figure out what they're doing for college and trying to go the same place. Doesn't work out and test their relationship, all that kind of stuff. Still fun, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, decided to watch the Karate Kid trilogy,
the original
movies.
Yeah.
They're on Netflix. They're not Netflix. Amazon, free with ads.
Yeah.
So I was like, sure, whatever. First movie's still good. Holds up well. The second one is also pretty good.
Yeah.
And the third is just stupid.
It was a cash-in, basically.
It was very much ridiculous in all of its premises, because somehow the Cobra Kai dojo has lost all their people. What's his face? Keen goes to one of his former buddies that I guess is rich now. They come up with a weird plan to get back at Daniel by picking up some karate prodigy from L.A., whatever it was.
Yeah.
Like badass karate, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Get him to just harass Daniel until he gets him into the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
To defend his title. And then they both get to the finals and like decide to try and just torture him.
Mm-hmm.
And then lose. Because they're stupid. Yeah.
Basically, the problem with the third movie is that it's basically just a rehash of the first two.
Kind of. It's just a ridiculous premise.
Yeah.
Like your entire, it's like you're so concerned to torture an 18-year-old kid.
Mm-hmm.
He's like about to go to college.
Mm.
That kind of thing. Like you're so, somehow he's destroyed your entire business, even though you're rich enough to not care if you get people in.
Mm-hmm.
All that kind of stuff. And it's like, this is stupid.
Yeah.
It's just incredibly stupid.
Yeah.
It's weird. So yeah, the first two, good to watch, but the third one's just kind of like ridiculous.
Yeah. Keep in mind, the second movie, when it came out, was actually criticized because they thought it was kind of a rehash of the first one. But see, at least with the second one, you know, they do a good deal of going more into Mr. Miyagi's character.
Yeah.
You know, more into his background, kind of helping him flesh him out instead of being, you know, the magical Asian sensei like he was in the first one.
Yeah. It at least has the whole thing with his former friend at his father's dojo.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff, who's angry for no real reason.
Mm-hmm.
By the end. The whole thing is weird.
Mm.
And then his student just picking fights for no real reason out of just honor, I guess.
Mm.
That's all weird. But yeah, the third movie is just stupid. Mm. Yeah, the whole thing with what is it? The him and Miyagi want to go to do like start up a bonsai store.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing is all weird, and it's right next to the train track, so there's constantly getting trains in.
Mm-hmm.
And just the notion of like, oh, we're gonna torture this 18-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so ridiculous. But yeah, that's those first two are definitely worth watching, especially if you're gonna watch
Cobra Kai. Yeah,
the third one, I don't know how they would involve any of that other than just the whole he was won the tournament twice.
Mm-hmm.
That thing. Watched WandaVision, which is fun. They do some more kind of boundary testing of what's going on there as some of the cracks start becoming more obvious.
Mm-hmm.
In what's going on. Not really going to spoil anything, but yeah, it goes to some interesting lengths to kind of explain what's going on and why a certain thing that is revealed is going to be interesting to see how it unfolds throughout this season.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's been fun. Watching more Bob's Burgers. I'm in season 8. Just some really good episodes. I did like the first episode of season 8, which just has different art styles throughout the episode.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like one every like 30 seconds, something like that. some good ones, some not great ones, but whatever.
Yeah.
Trying a lot of stuff there. But yeah, lots of cool episodes here, especially I like the ones where the kids have to recap what's happened, which is the one where they have the school plays or whatever.
Yeah.
For Mother's Day.
Oh, God, that one was great.
And Tina's essentially like her version of that. If you remember that, the high school play that was redoing like Aliens,
mm-hmm.
that kind of thing. She has that, except that mixed with Freaky Friday,
mm-hmm.
where Sigourney Weaver's character swaps bodies with the alien mom.
Mm-hmm.
It's just very stupid and ridiculous. and pretty funny. So, yeah, still lots of good stuff here. Been playing more Rocket League. They're doing their Lucky Lanterns event for the Lunar New Year. Mm-hmm. Stuff that's going on. So I'm enjoying that. Playing some more Fortnite. I got 2 wins yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
One was just a bit of luck. The other one was actually kind of having some rocket launcher ammo going into the final 4.
Mm-hmm.
Got into a fight with one dude, managed to kill him with a rocket, which he had some more rocket ammo. So I let the other two fight off, and I just shot a rocket at him as soon as he finished and killed him and won. Yeah, the other one was just, they just lost sight of me. And so I just shot him in the back a bunch of times and killed him.
Yeah.
Really too amazing. Just catching somebody off guard. But also got the Super Mario, 3D World and Bowser's Fury.
Yeah.
Mostly played the Bowser's Fury part of it. Which is actually pretty neat. It's kind of like if they tried to make Sunshine now, but good. like water jetpack kind of gimmick to it. So it's kind of, you're set on the kind of island area. It's not really a set place. Just Bowser Jr. approaches Mario, says his dad's gone. Off his rockers, you know, super angry, all that. He's out of control, so he asks him for help to get his dad back to normal. So you kind of help him with that, and you're kind of going around these different parts of the island to get these cat shrines or cat shines. There are a number of them in the different areas, like usually 3 or 4, but the first time you're trying to get to 5, so you can kind of do them in any order you want. And as you do that, you're collecting power-ups, and you get like 5 of each stored at once, so it kind of gets weirdly no threat of dying. There's no lives or anything, so when you die, you just start back whatever your last like checkpoint is, I guess, for that. So you kind of have to explore, and you know how in Breath of the Wild, when there's going to be a reset, you see a lot of red is like the red like sun comes up when it does the reset.
Oh.
It kind of does that, but it's rain.
Mm.
It starts just raining, and as he comes up, rises up to his furious form, I guess. He'll drop like lava pellets, like raindrops or something like that, that destroy stuff or whatever. So you got to watch out for that. There are also specific blocks that can only be destroyed by him because he does like a like fire beam, I guess, that he shoots. So when you start seeing shadows, as a bright light starts coming out of him, you want to get hiding behind something that gets you in the shade. Mm. So you don't worry about that. But there are blocks that he has to destroy to get like probably a shine or something like that behind it. Mm. You can collect coins, but I don't know why. I don't think it gives you anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's a counter. Like when you die, you lose all the coins and it's not used for anything as far as I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, once you reach the milestone of 5, the next time he shows up, you go jump on the bell and turns you into a giant cat Mario, anime cat Mario.
Mm-hmm.
And you go fight him. So, you have like, it's basically all, the regular cat Mario moves, but you want to kind of knock him over, and then you do a pound on his shell and that ends or you want to finish off his health. If you get the shines near a like lighthouse, it'll do a little bit of damage to him, as it's like, I don't know, he's weak to light for some reason. I don't know, some weird restrictions on that stuff, but it's pretty fun as like a side thing here. And sounds kind of more one of the more interesting experiments with the Mario formula that they've had in a while. So it's pretty neat. Probably thing I'm more excited about.
Two-player part of that is pretty fun too.
Yeah. You can have Bowser Jr. hang out with you. That person, the second player, can play as them. And the neat things, they have like levels to it. You can just say, you know, you don't want him there at all for any, or him to help out a little bit, which usually points out like, oh, if you butt stomp this area, some coins will come out, or it'll help fight enemies or collect coins or that kind of stuff. I think you can turn them on all the way to help you out a lot, which I assume be good for a kid playing it by themselves. But yeah, there's also like a couple of spots up on walls that are like these paint things, and he takes the brush from Sunshine and paints over it, and that usually gives you a power up of some kind. But yeah, it's kind of a weird power fantasy Mario game, because there's no real threat of dying, and you collect all these power-ups that you can just swap between at any time. Because once you pick one of those, it just pops the one you had back into your like inventory. It's a real weird thing, but it's pretty neat for what it's kind of doing differently than most of the other Mario games. So that'd be nice to play some more of that. But Teresa, how about you?
Yeah, we've been playing that today too. So we did the three-player for the main game. That was kind of fun. And then my kid and I did the two-player for and I of course had to do Bowser Jr. So that's just the way shit goes. We went out in the cold and the snow to pick that up, and we got some of the new amiibos that came out too. And reserved the last Cat Mario one in like a 30-mile radius, so we're gonna go pick that up from a different Best Buy tomorrow. But other than that, I've been playing Red Dead 2 because, you know, I didn't finish it. Nobody finished it. Okay, maybe a few people finished it.
I did.
You did?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I've been playing that, and then I was playing a little bit of PSO2. In my usual stuff that I play, I've been playing Civ, I've been playing Animal Crossing. I'm not even going to put those on my show notes thing, because, you know, I'm always playing that stuff. But we've been watching Ghost Stories, and yes, we've been watching the dub.
The one from the early 2000s. Yeah.
Yeah, it's hysterical. Oh my god.
That is like an entire series of events that basically invented the whole anime abridged formula before it was even a thing. But
Yeah.
So you know sort of the whole story behind that, right?
Yeah, they couldn't find anybody to do it, and finally they got somebody to do a dub, and they're like, okay, but we're gonna be really corny. And they're like, you know what? Just keep the original Japanese names for all of the demons, ghosts, whatever, spirits, and have at it.
Yeah, basically, you've got pretty much all of it right. Basically, it was a series that was based on a fairly popular series of children's books, but it was the actual anime itself. Well, I mean, you've watched it. It's interesting. The anime in and of itself without the dub. It's generic as all hell.
Yeah.
Very, very low budget. The animation's extremely choppy, even by the standards of the time. So apparently ADV, you know, God, remember them?
I think I do.
Yeah. For those of you younger kids, back when we were around the turn of the millennium, if you wanted to get anime DVDs, ADV was pretty much the only game in town. Next to like Manga Core, but that's another That's another thing entirely. Anyway, the point is, ADV had already gotten like a localization deal all the way through in before the thing even began production, which kind of explains why ADV no longer exists. And, you know, it did so poorly over in Japan that, you know, when they finally said we got the localization team ready, the original studio, they talked to ADV and they said, look, we're going to be honest with you. This thing was a complete flop over here. If you still want to go ahead and put it through in the U.S., that's fine. But we're going to let you just get, we're going to basically give you completely free rein on the dub. The only conditions are you can't change any of the names. You can't change the names of any of the traditional folkloric elements in the story. And you can't really change the overall generic plot. Everything else is up for grabs. Mm-hmm. That's where we get the amazing freaking dub that is the Ghost Stories dub, where, you know, they basically turn, you know, the well, you tell them.
Oh my gosh, it's just hysterical. There's a lot of irreverence. My favorite part is the little brother.
Yeah.
They just have him talk gibberish. Because why not?
Most of the time, yeah, it's pretty much just gibberish.
And then the classmate who I believe she's an upperclassman who probably is some sort of medium. Yeah. They never really come out and say it.
Yeah, I think
she's like always witnessing. Like,
yes, she turned her into a total Jesus freak.
Yeah, she's a born again Christian, and she is just never shutting up.
So much
never.
So that like, why don't you just go bomb an abortion clinic or something?
Oh God, it's just hysterical.
Oh yeah, so, and it's very, very, very irreverent early 2000s humor with. All the good and bad that entails.
Oh yeah, it's
there were
completely
definitely
topical.
A handful of jokes that would not fly today. Unless you know, very certain people were the ones who were in charge of it. You know, that whole joke about like they're trying to get her little brother on the track team, and
oh God,
yeah, and he's like. Run, and then he screams out, think of a big black man chasing you, and then he falls over onto his knees. He's like, well, at least we know he's not racist.
Yeah, they drop the R word, the retarded word. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff that...
My personal favorite is still the ghost rabbit story. That's like the crowning jewel of the whole thing.
Yeah. Oh, but we've been having fun with that. We definitely have.
Yeah. Yeah, it turns out he had a bunch of kids, and her reaction is, yeah, this guy's a bitch! Why are we getting a little bastard?
Oh, it's great. It's great.
Oh, God, that show, that is absolutely worth watching more than once. It's literally kind of like Airplane, in that there are little jokes here and there you don't catch the first time.
Yeah.
But yeah. Keep going.
Yeah, we've been doing a fair bit of rewinding. We're like, what? Yeah. Oh, we've been watching that, and we've been watching Dragon Ball, and we've gotten to the part where his grandfather takes care of the tail issue.
Mm-hmm.
Still watching Bob's. Chris, I think you're about to catch up with us, I swear. It just seems like we did the school play episode like last week. So we're getting there. And then Outlander, we've been watching that. So yeah, that's really, you know, about it other than working and of course, holy crap, it's freaking cold, but what do you do? You know, excuse me.
Yeah. All right.
So, yeah, what have you been doing, Brandon?
Well, I finished Cyber Shadow, which is the recent game published by Yacht Club, and yeah, it's definitely got a hell of a payoff, but man, it is definitely one of those games that will absolutely beat your ass into submission. But yeah, that game is very good. I finished that, so I started playing more Final Fantasy VII Remake. We are just, I think I mentioned this last time, we're in Wall Market now, which if you played the original Final Fantasy VII, you know what that entails. That's the part where, let's see, amongst other things, you're trying to get into Don Cornero's household to get Tifa, because Tifa either was inadvertently or she originally just kind of did it on her own, got sold into his harem, probably, you know, and now you're trying to find ways to get her out. And the sort of like major idea is you know, Aerith is with you now. And I don't quite remember Aerith being this snarky, but she definitely is. So, whatever. You go into the arena and fight a few various groups, you know, fight a few different enemies, and then finally you end up fighting the Hell House, which is that weird, nightmarish looking thing that's basically a big, like, house with, like, a cuckoo clock cuckoo inside of it that's basically trying to murder you. And then afterward is the part where Cloud gets into a dress. So, yeah. You remember. If you played the original Final Fantasy VII, you remember that whole part. And since I had been hearing about it so much, and, you know, it was like the first, I think it was like 7 hours or 8 hours or free, I decided to download The Division 2. Now, The Division 2 is the one that takes place in the ruins of Washington, D.C. The first one took place in New York. And it's funny because, you know, this was that point when Ubisoft was trying their best to convince people that the game isn't political, even though it takes place in the ruins of Washington, D.C. Am I alone here?
No. I'm following you. I don't know what they're trying to think, but
I will say that, like, as far as like the actual enemies you confront, they aren't explicitly political overall. You've got the hyenas, which are basically just your standard, you know, gang of bandits and thieves. Your like big major enemy for most of it is the True Sons, who are led by like this renegade National Guard guy named Hawthorne, who was he's kind of like sort of like what you get with like a shell shock veteran type, who basically, while he's trying to keep everything under control during the spreading of the plague, he kind of snaps and just says, you know what, fuck it, these people are dead anyway, let's save all the food and supplies and shit for my men underneath me. He ends up getting arrested and court-martialed and imprisoned, and then a bunch of his supporters break him out of prison. They found a group called the True Sons, where he's the general. And basically what makes them stand out is that they're basically they're all like, you know, military veterans and former army who, like, you know, went AWOL and shit like that. But it's a fairly, like, gameplay wise, it's a fairly typical, you know, going, you know, it's a fairly typical cover shooter, basically. You're going from one place to another, and then you're taking cover and shooting dudes, and then taking one thing to another thing. You get the idea. It's fairly generic. Not saying it's not fun. It's definitely enjoyable for what it is. That's kind of more or less been that. Books, obviously, I'm still reading like crazy, as I always do. My as far as like books right now, the two books I've been reading more than anything else are both by Ear 11. One of them's called This Perfect Day, and the other one's called The Boys from Brazil. Anybody who's heard those, you probably know The Boys from Brazil. That actually became a movie. And This Perfect Day is like one of those books that occasionally gets put onto like required reading lists for like school kids and everything. It's like one of those dystopian type books. They're both pretty good. Those of you who don't know, Ear 11 is actually the guy who also wrote Rosemary's Baby and The Stepford Wives, neither of which I've managed to read just yet. Yeah, so that's pretty much what I've been doing. Oh, yeah. Other than that, really just the crazy Georgia weather. Yeah, because it's been rainy the last couple days, very wet and very cold, except for a few days ago when it got up to around 74.
What?
Yeah. And then it dipped right back down to the 50s.
That's bananas.
Yeah, it's Georgia. What can I say?
Wow.
I don't know what it is, man. It's just, you know, the state's like right next to the Gulf of Mexico and like right next to, you know, the Atlantic. And I guess, you know, the way, you know, air flows and shit, it just makes the state's weather just completely fucking bonkers. I don't know why. That's pretty much everything for me. Who wants to you got anything else y'all want to add before we move on?
No, just it's cold, and everybody knows it.
Mm-hmm. All right, well then it's now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And today we're going to talk a little bit about things that, you know, we consider to be the height of luxury, the height of decadence, the height of, you know, established and sophisticated. But back in the old days, in ages past, were considered not fit for the upper crust, specifically food, and specifically something I think we've all had at least once in our lives. Lobster.
Yeah.
All right. I guess we've all had lobster at one point, haven't we?
Mm-hmm.
Either, you know, fresh, you know, boiled, you know, in its shell, or, you know, maybe you had it in like a soup, like a lobster bisque, or, you know, maybe you had it like lobster roll, or maybe you got it really classy, like lobster thermidor, or, you know, something like that. You know, lobster is one of those things when we think of, it's like one of the more expensive seafood items that you can get, right?
It is now, yeah.
So much so that, you know, there are certain lobster dishes, like I mentioned before, lobster thermidor or lobster Newberg, which are like considered to be these really ritzy type of dishes that you'd order at like a really fancy restaurant with like a hard to pronounce French name, you know? you know, the type of place that has like multiple Michelin stars behind it. But here's the thing. Lobster, and not just lobster, but also stuff like oysters. Lobster was once considered not only not expensive, it was actually considered poverty food. Like, it was actually considered food for the poor. When the first pilgrims actually made their way onto the United States in Massachusetts Bay, the lobster back then was incredibly plentiful. Like, so plentiful, you could just dump a net into anywhere in the ocean and easily come up with a bunch of lobsters. There was that many just trawling the bottom of the Atlantic and around the coast. Because of that, and also keep in mind, lobster is a shellfish. And what's one of the things about shellfish? It doesn't matter if it's lobster, you know, shrimp, crab, crustaceans in general. They're bottom feeders, right?
They are. Mm-hmm.
They basically live off all the stuff that floats down to the ocean floor. For good or for ill. Which basically means that they eat all the trash and the shit that comes up from the top and floats down to the bottom. And because you got, again, a shellfish that eats all the trash of the seafloor, and let's be honest, it basically looks like a cockroach with giant hands.
Mm-hmm.
You can probably expect that, you know, as soon as, like, the world kind of industrialized and kind of, you know, became more settled in, people tended to look at lobster unfavorably. Lobster was something that was used for fertilizer. It was used for fish bait, which isn't a bad idea. It actually makes lobster meat actually does make very good bait. And it was prison food. It was something that you fed to prisoners, you know, in these dank dungeon places, you know. So often so that at one point there were actually laws on the books in various states where it was thought that feeding lobster to a prisoner was considered cruel and unusual punishment.
Oh my God.
And keep in mind when I say that, you're like, wow, really? I mean, you know, again, because we live in a world where lobster is like the height of luxury, it's like, how could they possibly consider it cruel and unusual? Keep in mind, the type of lobster, when we eat it, it's usually like, at the basic, it's boiled alive in an enormous pot with like all kinds of spices and herbs thrown in, and it's seasoned well, and they always try
butter,
and make
butter.
Lots and lots of butter. They always try and make sure they get the just right lobster. The ones that aren't too big, but also not too small, not too old, not too young. Whereas then they basically would just throw a bunch of lobster, didn't matter what its age or size was, into a pot, boil it, and then basically just throw it onto like a slop plate or whatever without like anything to crack it open or anything, just fingers.
Oh, geez. Okay. So that's different.
Yeah. And eventually, what would happen is that you go into the 1800s, and what are two of the things that first come into existence? Railroads and canned food.
Hmm.
And one of the very first things that people started canning and shipping out into the middle of the country, lobster. Now, obviously, not just lobster. They also did, like, shrimp, for example. You ever heard the term potted shrimp before?
No, that's a new one.
Yeah, potted shrimp, it's like a, it's literally like a kind of canned shrimp that's kind of a lot like lobster is. It's put in a can, and it's, like, left to, like, congeal in this thing of, like, butter and fat. And it's usually, like, the mixture usually has, like, some grated nutmeg and stuff in it. And kind of did the same with lobster. And the thing was, as it became more popular and it started spreading out into the country, more people were like, this canned lobster isn't so bad, but maybe I would like to go and actually have it at the source. And so all those people started making their way to New England, which then, as is now, is more or less the primary source of lobster fishing in the United States. And this happened so much that by 1880, demand had sharply increased while the supply had gone down, slowly turning lobster into a luxury item.
Jeez.
Yep. So according to this little article I got from medium.com that explains, you know, why lobsters are expensive. Well, obviously there's a couple reasons. One of the biggest issues with lobster is that unlike a lot of more plentiful fish, lobsters are very difficult to farm. You know, a lot of, fish today that we get now are farm fished. You know, they're, you know, they're like, you know, fish farming, that kind of thing. You know, a lot, especially with like, you know, they do that with some freshwater fish. They also do it with like oysters and clams. Lobsters aren't really good at that. And on top of that, they're also very susceptible to disease. On top of that, when there's laws in place that because of the overfishing, there were laws that were put in place to try and retain the lobster population by making it so that you cannot legally catch and sell a lobster before it has been growing for 7 years. If it's too small, or if it's a female that's carrying eggs, by law, it has to be thrown back into the ocean. Most lobsters, of course, that you'll eat have to basically be fresh, which basically means that they have to be transported and cooked alive. And if you've ever been, you know, to a seafood restaurant and you've seen like a bunch of lobsters in a tank, that's actually a very specific tank that is specifically manufactured to house lobsters. They're a saltwater tank. They have to be kept cool. They have to be kept moist. And they need like a steady supply of oxygen being pumped into it. So you put all of this together, and on top of the fact that, you know, the demand went up and suddenly it became considered a luxury item, and you basically create one of the priciest pieces of seafood you can get. Now, weirdly enough, though, the lobster supply prices have actually been kind of slowly decreasing over the last few years. And you want to know why?
Climate change. Oh, yeah.
Specifically, the global warming, which creates warmer conditions, and lobsters love warm water. So they basically have been reproducing like crazy. But yeah, that's pretty much the reason, you know, how lobsters went from like the food of the poor and the imprisoned to the height of luxury, and how weirdly arbitrary that kind of thing can be.
It really is.
Yeah. And, you know, this was something that you fed to pigs and dogs.
Gosh.
And that has been yet another edition of Brandon's Random Factoid.
Interesting.
Yeah. Fairly similar story happens with, like, oysters and clams. But, yeah. So, with that out of the way, it is now time to move on to the show proper. And as always with the show proper, we start off with the assholes of the week. And the first big asshole of the week that we had was the president of the Tokyo Olympics, Mr. Yoshihiro Mori, who, if you've ever seen pictures of him, he's basically old as dirt. And unfortunately, there's a certain trend with old Japanese men, and that usually happens to be with the fact that they're often really freaking sexist. And this week, he opened his gum flaps a little too often, and he ended up having to resign after he made a remark about women talking too much.
Oh, he did not.
Yeah, basically saying that their meetings on the organizing committee take too long because women feel like they need to speak up. Mm-hmm. And apparently have some sort of competition. So when one woman wants to say something, obviously the other's got to say something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all that kind of fun stuff.
Yeah.
And it feeds into the kind of inequality that is happening in the like executive world of Japan. Well, they're not the, as many women there.
Well, it's not just
there are like
it's
over
not
here.
Just the corporate world. It's Japan in general.
Yeah, but this guy's in the like executive part of the.
Yeah,
world.
He's like a big Zaibatsu type dude. Yeah, that type of culture, you know, it's that type of corporate culture. It's not new, and it's, you know, been sort of a mainstay of the Japanese business world for a long time.
And with the potential likelihood that the Tokyo Olympics get canceled completely,
mm-hmm.
They get put back into the queue for a later date.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have this kind of shit coming out here just a few months before they're supposed to be starting in July, I think. Yeah. So, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but anyway. And then we got another another just magnet for controversy. Joss Whedon. Because Joss Whedon has again become under fire for abuse allegations from a few cast members from the old Buffy show.
Yeah, the people that have spoken out are Charisma Carpenter, Michelle Trachtenberg, and Amber Benson. Mm-hmm. Speaking up about shitty things he was doing, creating a toxic work environment.
Casual cruelty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like Michelle talked about how there was a rule around her, like don't leave her in a room with Joss Whedon mm-hmm. alone, which is not what you want to say about a teenage girl.
Nope.
Right.
So yeah, it's not looking good for him to have much more of a future in the industry.
No.
At least not in the part of it that he wants mm-hmm. to be in. As we've seen, there's a market for shitty people. Mm-hmm.
There is.
Maybe not with the prestigious part of the
industry. We will be getting to momentarily. But yeah. God. Why is it that some of the best people in film and television also have to be some of the biggest assholes?
That's been an over.
Well, some people would maybe question that framing for Joss Whedon. Well, some of the stuff he's made is good. Others, maybe not so much.
That's true. But
and my soul of me part luck with the cast you get.
And unfortunately, we've got another unfortunate trend that's been happening, which is hate crimes against Asian Americans.
Yeah, this has been kind of a thing that's been coming up of late, especially some of the more influential members of the community speaking out against it, like actors like Daniel Day-Kim and who else is it here? Like offering up rewards for people with any information about the people that perpetrated these acts in the Bay Area in California.
Yeah.
It's stuff that shouldn't be happening, but is inflamed by the COVID stuff as continued conspiracies continue with the origins of it, as well as various other anti-Chinese sentiment.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's some bad shit that you would like to think wouldn't happen, but no.
It does. It happens. It happens, and it happens more often than you would like to think it does.
Yeah, it does.
We
woke up, this has probably been 15 years back. We woke up in the middle of the night and there were fire trucks everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Because somebody had perpetrated a hate crime against an Asian person who lived two doors down from us and set their garage on fire. And we lived in townhouses at that time, and their garage was attached to the garage next to us, which was attached to our garage. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of a big problem. I mean, it's not, you know, but we were unhappy about that.
Yeah. And, unfortunately, it's... Yeah, the COVID shit is one of the big culprits.
It's really exasperating that.
Yeah. But fortunately, it wasn't all assholes. We do have a hero of the week. And it was hero of the week. He was actually given... he was awarded this week and recognized for his actions. Eugene Goodman, who is the you may have known him. He's the security guy. If you've seen the picture, he's the guy leading all of the January 6th insurrection. You know, the beer belly putch, as I like to call it. He's the one who managed to distract them and lead them away from the Senate room. We also now know, though, thanks to the impeachment proceedings, he also basically saved Mitt Romney's life.
Managed to catch him near the area where the mob was coming to. turned him away, told him to go the other way. Not letting him go towards where the mob was.
Yep.
And helped save his life because he was one of the potential targets. Romney, Pelosi, and Pence. They showed another floor plan of the whole area and showing that when Pence was getting evacuated out of the stairwell, that the mob was actually not that far away.
So he actually kind of also helped save Mike Pence's life as well.
Yeah, luckily they were in the stairwell and the people that were running around had no real great idea where they were at or needed to go for this. So luckily they weren't as well organized as they could have been. But yeah, they wrote up a quick bill to award him the congressional gold medal of honor. Yeah, congressional gold medal to recognize what he did for multiple members of Congress that day. So yeah, good on him.
Yeah.
He's one of the few to get out of that without too much injury or anything like that.
And then, you know, he was recognized, he was given a standing ovation on the floor of the Senate. And then the Senate turned right around and acquitted the dude who was responsible for this shit. But we'll get to that. We'll get to that. This week was the impeachment trial of former President Donald J. Trump. The one of the first things that the House managers did to start the whole thing off was play a whole video of the insurrection. And, you know, Trump's guilt in it.
It was a good video. Definitely something people should watch to see a good way to see like what his involvement was in it, as well as the things the insurrectionists did. Because for as much as they're supposedly the Blue Lives Matter,
they beat up a lot
certainly
of cops.
Did not care at that point.
They beat up a lot of cops and even killed two.
I think it was 140 were injured, one killed, and I think two more committed suicide afterwards.
So they basically was like, you know, this is it. We're going to show you this, and then we're going to try. We're going to show you that he has very much a part in instigating and orchestrating this. So the whole thing basically started on, I think it was it Monday or Tuesday?
Tuesday.
I think Monday, wasn't Monday like where they were just sort of like getting all the parameters and stuff set up before the actual trial started?
Kind of. They voted on Tuesday whether to continue. Mm-hmm. Like whether it was constitutional to impeach a president after they're out of office, which got, I think, 56 to 44. No, 57, I think, to 44, but or 43. Still, no, it was 56.
Yeah.
But still, they were past it and kept going, had the managers sort of doing their thing, talking, generally doing a very good job. From the House side, so much so that, you know, a lot of people are like, yeah, these guys are doing a great job of telling you why, you know, explaining their position really well. Because once the Trump defense attorneys came out, people kept convincing, comparing them to like the stuff from My Cousin Vinny. Those kind of portrayals. Yeah. It's like, yeah, that's not what you want at all. But the thing is, I don't think people necessarily realize they're not there to actually do a great job. They're there to keep it from getting to the point where he could actually be convicted. So not let it get to 67. senators voting for mm-hmm. it, which they were successful.
Yeah. So basically, the first day was where they did their opening arguments, and let's be honest, it's not the House managers that made the news because of it. No, it was Trump's defense team because of how unbelievably awful they were at their job.
Yeah.
Which
is not what you really want out of people defending.
Yeah. You had the first dude who was basically like, it, but let's be honest, he was winging it straight up. He was just winging it. And then the second dude was even worse because he obviously had rehearsed and was not winging it. It was just that his arguments were childish and juvenile.
And screamy, yeah. too. He was yeah. just a screamy guy.
Mm.
Which, yeah, the one lawyer, Michael Vanderveen, mm-hmm. apparently people figured out where he lived in mm-hmm. Philly. And vandalized his driveway,
yep.
I think.
Boy.
With the word traitor in red mm-hmm. paint. And an arrow pointing to his house. Which is like a good way to show that there are consequences for the things yeah. you do. And also to show you this is the peaceful
mm-hmm.
protesting. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That people can mm-hmm. do.
And then there was day two. And day two, I can't quite remember like what really the thing about day two was that we started seeing more previously unreleased like footage of the riot. That's yeah. where we got to find out that, you know, about the thing with Romney and Pence that we talked about earlier. Also, we found out that it was a lot more violent than we thought it was originally. I mean, it was already pretty violent, but the extent of it was not quite known. Completely. And turns out that, you know, that whole thing where they basically ended up killing two cops was not an outlier. They attacked a shit ton of cops during this thing.
Yeah.
And God, so many of these people were so fucking stupid. So many of them basically incriminating themselves because they're freaking live tweeting shit and doing stuff on Twitch and freaking taking selfies and stuff. It's
yeah, not wearing a
not
mask.
Wearing a mask.
Do anything.
We also kind of started to find out more about like the demographics of the people involved, and you found out that this was mostly a middle class, sort of middle class to upper middle class, kind of petite bourgeois type thing that also ended up was largely made up of people who, even though they were middle class, were also in financial dire financial straits. Because, you know, a lot of them had been forced to shut down their businesses and quarantine and stuff. Yeah. And,
yeah.
And then, you know, there was a thing that happened where the Senate actually voted to have witnesses come in. And then at the last minute, they decided to reverse on that and have this previously unheard phone conversation between Kevin McCarthy and then President Trump. And they had it read into the record. Which, by the way, if you've not heard this particular conversation, it pretty much incriminates him entirely. He basically all but admits that they're basically acting on his orders and that, you know, he could make them back off if he wanted to, but he didn't. And so much so that Kevin McCarthy, who then and now is still kissing his ass, basically just straight up said, "Who the fuck do you think you're talking to?" And that's verbatim, by the way. And then the vote to convict or acquit went up, and as the Constitution makes clear, in order to successfully convict a president, you have to have 2/3 of the Senate vote. The vote ended up coming 57-43, which is a clear majority, but not large enough a majority needed to actually convict him. I believe, how many Republicans was it that ended up voting for to convict? I believe it was, yeah, it was seven. That's pretty
such
much
a minuscule amount.
Yeah, but it's also like the most bipartisan vote to convict a president in the history of the Senate.
Yeah, point.
So basically, because they did not have the votes they needed, even though it was a clear majority, Trump is essentially acquitted.
Yeah, and the one lawyer's like false equivalency, saying that he's been found not guilty of incitement, which
no,
is
it's not the same.
No,
acquitted is not exonerated.
You're a lawyer.
No,
you're a lawyer. You know what this means? Doesn't happen. In fact, McConnell was basically saying like Trump is responsible for everything that happened here, but still voted to acquit him
He's Mitch McConnell. That's
he said that it's unconstitutional. His whole argument is unconstitutional.
Yeah, that's
to impeach someone who isn't a sitting president. But he's the one who blocked anything from happening while he was still a sitting president.
Which is why I say that's a bullshit argument, and he knows it.
It totally is. Yeah, it totally is.
But let's be honest, we all knew this is how it was going to end.
Yeah, and there's no morals or scruples whatsoever about Mitch McConnell. So.
Which, ultimately, this may end up being a positive outcome, because
it puts him on the record of who supports the insurrection.
Yeah. And because they had to read that that conversation between McCarthy and Trump into the record, it basically implicates all of them now and forever. And we already know now that there's definitely a schism happening in the Republican Party right now. Because there's been talk, people are now making, there's a bunch of like old Reagan and Bush 1 and 2 old staff and, you know, policymakers and administration officials who have been on talks about founding a third party.
There are dozens of us. Dozens. Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I'm like, go for it. One, because it will critically split the Republican vote and Democrats will basically rule in perpetuum. But also because, I'll be honest, as much as I disagree with them, I do think conservatives deserve to have a rational, sane party they can vote for.
Yeah, though they gave it up for to let the Tea Party take control of the party.
But
I happily did that for an hour.
So since Trump has been acquitted, the Dems are now looking at options they can take since that, let's be honest, inevitable conclusion. What are some options they're looking at?
Well, there's still the 14th Amendment, which has a part of it that mentions that, that the presidents that incite insurrection can be essentially barred from running for office again. Yeah, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, which bars anyone from holding office who has, quote, engaged in insurrection against the United States.
Now, see, that's
Something that only requires a majority vote, which we clearly have that from this.
Which we could easily pass.
Of course, the fun thing is that Trump put out a statement after this happened, which is hilarious. Definitely not written by him. Because, he said, let's see, it is a sad commentary in our times that one political party in America is given a free pass to denigrate the rule of law, defame law enforcement, cheer mobs, excuse rioters, and transform justice into a tool of political vengeance, and persecute, blacklist, cancel, and suppress all people and viewpoints with whom or which they disagree.
And now we're talking about
always have and always will be a champion for the unwavering rule of law, the heroes of law enforcement, and the right of Americans to peacefully and honorably debate the issues of the day without malice or without hate.
God, it's like projection, projection, projection.
Yeah, so I'm not sure if this is him trolling the GOP as far as wanting to start his own party or what, but it's kind of a wild thing to see. But also in the wake of it, let's see, Senator Cassidy has been censured by the Louisiana GOP. Mm-hmm. Burr's vote to convict has been called shocking and disappointing by the North Carolina GOP mm-hmm. chair. And Senator Toomey, Pennsylvania, has been chided by the Pennsylvania GOP mm-hmm. chair. So you can see who owns the GOP, the state GOP chairs, essentially,
mm-hmm.
which is all Trumpers. Mm-hmm. This point, but yeah, the 14th Amendment seems like the key one they could focus
and they
on.
Could actually accomplish that one.
Yeah, so it just requires a simple majority
vote we have here. So
yeah, but it might be something they not do right
yeah.
now. Get back to things like the
stimulus,
the checks, yeah. and all that kind of
There's
stuff.
There's other important right pressing now. Matters that need to be attended to.
Because I think that also requires a whole
yeah.
thing for it as well. So
yeah, they have to go through budget reconciliation and stuff like that. So
yeah,
but don't worry, Bernie's on top of it. So he's the head of the budget committee. So anyway, and obviously there's still state charges that he's going to have to deal with because. DC's attorney general is looking into potential criminal charges for Trump.
Yeah. Yeah, lawyers inside the DC attorney general's office are working to determine if it is legally viable to use district statutes to charge former President Trump for his alleged role in the insurrection. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the attorney general Carr was seen first floated the idea of this about a month ago. Yeah, especially pointing to the flurry of information that's come out since then. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm not 100% sure exactly what they're looking at, but they're looking at all the potential legal hurdles and all mm-hmm. that. Try and see like what they might be able to get mm-hmm. them on.
And then of course there's the stuff coming that's going to be coming out in New York fairly soon. Because yeah. They're trolling through his properties right now.
Yeah, he's not out of the woods
nope.
yet.
So yeah, that was the beginning and ending of the second impeachment of Donald J. Trump. Also, it should probably point out that the majority this time around was bigger than it was the first go around.
Yeah.
So there is that too. But anyway, so
what happens when he's no longer in mm-hmm. office? They don't have to worry about him too
yeah.
much.
And plus, you know, he's basically like banned from pretty much all social media. So we don't really have to give a shit about him anymore, which let's be honest, that's probably one of the real perks of the Biden presidency is that you can wake up in the morning and not have to worry about whatever crazy shit the president put on Twitter today.
Right.
But
the only thing that I've seen out of Biden video wise this week, which I've been, you know, out of touch a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a video of him in some very worn-looking jeans walking his dogs.
Mm-hmm.
No problems there.
Yep.
No problems at all.
Nope. But, yeah. By the way, speaking of there being a new boss in town, do you remember how back during the Trump days when, you know, he basically gave carte blanche to his press secretary and the people working underneath them to just do whatever the fuck they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Threaten people, basically harass people, do whatever they could to not have to answer questions or anything like that. You know, just shit that we kind of grew numb to, but we kind of forget that is totally not only unprofessional, but also very unethical. But we just grew numb to it because it was just the thing that happened. Yeah, well, the deputy press secretary was suspended from the White House this week when they found out that they were caught threatening a reporter.
Yeah, this is TJ Ducklow, mm-hmm. Who's been suspended for a week without pay. He reportedly issued a sexist and profane threat to a journalist that was seeking to cover his relationship mm-hmm. with another reporter.
Yeah.
And they dealt with it in-house, at least as far as the press secretary mm-hmm. group. She's not Jen Psaki has not spoken with Biden yet about this. Maybe has since this article went up when this happened, but yeah, there are definitely people that think it's a light sentence for what he did, which definitely could be. But it's gonna be interesting to see how this develops.
Yeah.
If Biden puts down further punishment.
It's possible. Just a big difference between the old boss and the new boss. If this had been the Trump administration, not only would that guy not have been suspended, he might have even gotten a promotion. Hell, he might have even become the new press secretary. All right. And all right, next up. So a woman from Louisiana by the name of Tessica Brown, she became, infamous or famous nationwide after she decided to put Gorilla Glue in her hair.
Okay. My kid's trying to talk to me about this while I'm driving through the fucking snow. What is going on with this? Because I'm not following it at all.
Yeah, she used spray Gorilla Glue.
Okay, that stuff is potent.
There's a thing black women use, which is like a spray adhesive to kind of keep the hair in place the way they want
it. Yeah, she adding a weave or something, too?
I don't know, but she used the full-on Gorilla Glue, which, as people know, is one of the toughest glues out there. And had posted on her Instagram showing a month later that it was still like completely solid, essentially. Using water didn't work. Still kind of like a hair shield, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So she had posted about this, went to the ER. They didn't really have any way of doing anything to it.
Yeah.
But luckily for her, a plastic surgeon, Dr. Michael Obang, had figured out something that would potentially work, offered to do it for free instead of what it would normally cost, like $12,000, I think he said. But essentially, it was like medical grade dissolvent and a few other things in it. And had done a test on a like a hair doll kind of thing to test that it worked, and it took 3 hours, but managed to get out of her hair, dissolve it and get it out. Luckily, with her hair intact and all that.
Well, I guess she learned a lesson there.
Yeah.
You know, there are some people who, you know, you can tell them, don't touch the stove, it'll burn your hand. And they'll learn the lesson without touching the stove.
I want to say there was a guy that, there was a guy that did not believe this was an actual thing. That she was faking, so he tried to glue a plastic cup to his face with Gorilla Glue. Had to go to the hospital. Let's see, where's his thing? I believe the TikTok influencer exaggerated claims she required a surgeon to unstick her hair, set out to prove Miss Brown wrong. Video he recorded showed him applying the same Gorilla Glue used by Miss Brown to the rim of a plastic cup, which he then stuck to his face and covered his nose. According to reports, the video ended when Mr. Martin appeared to realize the cup was stuck to his face, causing him to attend an emergency room where the cup was carefully peeled off his face. He has been told to cover his lip until the skin is healed. So yeah, don't be stupid.
Yeah, don't do stupid things. Live longer.
Yeah.
Like, don't take this as like a challenge to be like, yeah, that didn't actually happen. Because now there's a guy with had to essentially tear off a bit of lip skin to learn this lesson.
Ouch. I mean, it's a painful lesson.
Hey, you play stupid games, you win stupid prizes.
All right. And yeah, so next up. Oh, yeah, this is the other big story every thought about. There was a lawyer. Who was on a Zoom meeting with a judge and I think another lawyer too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the problem was he was stuck in the cat filter.
Oh, God. Yeah. It was the best. It was the best.
Yeah.
Had to tell the judge, I promise you I'm not a cat.
Yeah.
That's exactly what a cat would say. I'm a lawyer, not a cat. Oops.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was in Texas.
Oh. It is wonderful. I want that filter. We were talking about it after hours at work. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we all need that filter.
Yeah, I got some tweets here, some jokes, and somebody says, add a cat Finch.
Mm-hmm.
Yes!
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. The eyes are what just kills me.
Yeah. Apparently, the dude also has kind of a shady past, too, apparently, which is even funnier somehow. Yeah. And yeah, that pretty much ends the serious part of the show. So here we go into the entertainment and crazy shit. The big one, of course, being that Gina Carano got fired.
Yep.
Yeah, from Lucasfilm. Yeah.
Now,
they said she's not working for him and they have no intentions of hiring her in the future.
No. Yes. And so on top of that, they I think it was Hasbro also announced that they are not going to be releasing her action figure either.
Yeah, I want to say at Disney World they pulled all of her figures, except for the one like bundle package.
Yeah.
Had a bunch of the characters from Mandalorian.
Yeah, so get ready to see those bundle packages for a few $100 on eBay very soon.
Eh, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I saw somebody had made a crawler for the opening of Season 3 of Mandalorian. It says, Cara Dune crashed her X-Wing and died, LOL.
Mm.
But I think...
The one just took the Poochie thing.
Yes!
And just put her next to them.
Yes! Well, I think it would be better if they recast her and not deprive us of what I felt like she was a good the character, not the actor. The actor. The character was a good character and had a lot of potential, although really they had done quite a lot with her, so I don't know where they're going to go from there. She already had her redemption arc or whatever the hell you want to call it.
Also, let's just be honest, she wasn't a very good actor.
No. And I think that it would be, instead of just canceling the character that's attached to the actor, getting an actor who either is morally upstanding or at least knows how to keep their goddamn mouth shut if they're going to be anti-Semites.
Yeah.
Transphobes
or whatever.
Exactly.
The season kind of ends.
Mm-hmm.
The season kind of ends with everybody kind of going their own ways.
Yeah,
that is true.
You can let that character go fuck off and have somebody else.
So basically, they ended up dropping her at the ideal time. So
yeah.
Yeah, because apparently she was going to get her own spinoff. Mm-hmm. Up to the point that they were potentially going to announce it in December when they were announcing all the Star Wars shows.
And
she had to shit herself after the election.
Yeah, right.
And they said, well, no more. We're canceling that.
Yeah, I'm not going to be doing that.
So she probably knew she wasn't on very thick ice on that.
Well,
she decided to dance.
And frankly, Boba Fett's new BFF is a stronger... identifying female character. Can we even say female character anymore? I don't know. Is it okay? It should be.
Sure.
But that's a stronger character and with a lot more potential. Mm-hmm. And I mean that actor, she's fucking amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And has been for like the past 30 goddamn years.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was in the Street Fighter movie. Chun-Li.
I want to reemphasize to everyone, this is not some new shit. Gina Carano has gotten in trouble for shit like this before.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's been this sentiment for
a while. And Disney had already very clearly warned her, look, you know, we're going to let you stay on here, but there's going to be some conditions. And part of it is this bullshit. You can't do bullshit like this again. We will drop your ass faster than, you know, some random Star Wars metaphor I can't think of right now. But
yeah. But yeah, she had to kick the Nazi.
Essentially,
retweeting something on Instagram about how the Jews weren't necessarily just taken up by the Nazis, that their neighbors and children had turned on them. And that's similar to what's happening to Republicans, except not at all.
Mm-hmm. No.
So yeah, that's kind of the whole thing. There's that, and there was another one that was about share a photo of a person wearing multiple cloth masks with the caption, "Meanwhile in California," which is dumb, but both of those posts were gone by the next day, including others, other posts that she posted about, like, Jeff Epstein didn't kill himself, were still there.
Oh my god.
Mm-hmm.
But she's been liking suspect tweets for a while and posting very suspicious stuff. Clearly trying to find a line. I guess also at one point she changed her Twitter bio to specify her pronouns were beep, bop, and boop. You know, all that kind of shit.
But anyway, the point is she fucked around too.
So what did she win, Brandon? What is her prize at the end?
She got knocked down to the minor leagues and signed a film deal with Ben Shapiro.
And they're acting like she's one out.
Yeah. Who, might I remind everybody, is a practicing Orthodox Jew.
Yeah, and he is an idiot.
That's,
I don't know how he has anything he's doing of late.
Well,
because he is,
he
knows his audience, but he's just a stupid, stupid person to be propped up as, like, somehow the smartest person.
He is the dumb idea of what a dumb person's idea of what a smart person is.
He is the ideal mansplain in human form. Speaking about things he doesn't actually know about, but can speak somewhat authoritatively enough to be taken seriously. Yeah.
I want to remind people, because he reminds people every chance he gets whenever the issue of racism and American conservatism comes up. Ben Shapiro is a practicing, believing Orthodox Jew, and he just hired somebody who retweeted that shit about how the Jews weren't entirely blameless in the Holocaust.
Yeah, but she is in Hollywood. That's way bigger than anything he's ever done. And, of course, Ted Cruz jumps in on this, to which people joke that he defends Gina Carano more than he defends his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And talk about Hollywood canceling her. It's like, no, they didn't. She lost a job for being a stupid idiot.
Mm-hmm.
Doing the one thing that she shouldn't be doing, which is bringing down pressure on her employers. Mm-hmm. Exactly the opposite thing that, like, Chris Pratt does.
Yeah.
Despite being somebody who's known for being right.
Yeah. Because he knows how to be professional and keep his mouth shut.
Yeah. And so he gets to play in the Hollywood Disney game for a long time. Despite people having the same kind of issues with him as Gina Carano.
Well, that, and also because he's one of those kinds of conservatives, like, say, what's his name? The guy who used to be on, who used to be on Mystery Science Theater 3000, and now he does Riff Tracks, who is also a fairly card-carrying conservative, but he also knows that, hey, who also believes in tolerance, and that, you know, you may disagree with someone, but, you know, it shouldn't come between you and a professional relationship.
Yeah.
Unless, you know, it's something like saying that the Jews are not entirely unblameable in the Holocaust. God, that fucking man has no goddamn morals, I swear to God.
No. No.
Here's the thing. Much like a fucking... God, the thing is, Ben Shapiro is one of those dudes who's also a Hollywood failure. Like, because a lot of people don't realize, he originally was like a screenwriter. That's like how he started his writing career. And they wouldn't they wouldn't hire him because he sucks. He sucks and he's a bigoted asshole.
Yeah, this is the prize that Gina Carano won.
Yeah. You got knocked down into the minor leagues with the fucking... What's that company like? PureFlix and that shit. That's your career now.
Yeah, she's working with Enough.
Yeah, or you know, you'll end up working for the Asylum.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But anyway, more Disney news. Blue Sky Animation. Disney bought them, and they just shut them down. Blue Sky, of course.
Yeah, they're a part of the
Blue Sky, of course, is. Probably became famous for the Ice Age series.
So well
that they basically ringed it of every last drop of value they could possibly get out of it.
Yep.
Let's see what else they did, because I know they did some other stuff too. They did.
Well, they were working on a new movie.
Mm-hmm.
That they were about 10 months from finishing. Disney's basically shutting down.
Let's see. They also did which was like the first successful 3D animated Dr. Seuss movie. And basically,
Spies in Disguise.
Yeah, they also did. They also did that movie Robots, which actually is actually a pretty good movie. If you ever actually see it, it's actually really good. It was just a little too weird for the time it came out, but a surprisingly really smart movie. And they also did Rio 1 and 2. And and they did the Peanuts movie as well. Yeah, the Charlie Brown movie, which is actually not bad.
And they worked on effects for stuff like Alien Resurrection and Fight Club.
Yeah.
Shame for people to lose their jobs in this kind of
economy. Yeah.
Especially for the entertainment industry, where things aren't exactly super great unless you're a huge property, a huge company, which they were.
Reason I know about Robots is because it was a film that was produced and inspired by his he was one of the writers and producers, a guy named William Joyce. For those who don't know who William Joyce is, he's a very incredibly talented artist and writer who does like a bunch of like kids picture books that could very easily go in an adult's bookshelf because of how amazing his artwork is. But also he's the guy who created Roly Poly Oly, and he also is the guy who created the Guardians of Childhood series, which is the inspiration for that that movie. God, what was it called? It's like that action movie where Rise of the Guardians, where it's like, you know, Jack Frost and Santa Claus and Easter Bunny and the Tooth Fairy and the Sandman are all like superheroes and stuff. Yeah, but it's good shit. Sad to see them go, but unfortunately they've been kind of having issues for a while before this anyway. And then more sad news, Brooklyn Nine-Nine is ending after season 8.
Kind of hard to continue with.
Yeah.
How hard it is to make stuff right now.
Yeah. Plus, well, let's be honest, the whole like concept behind Brooklyn Nine-Nine just doesn't fly anymore.
It really doesn't.
It just does.
Yeah. But they're coming back for a 10-episode season. That will start this fall, part of the 2021-2022 season.
Mm. Yeah.
So at least they'll be able to go out on their own.
What do you know? Maybe they'll be able to tie into all that shit somehow. You know?
Yeah, they might.
Like maybe the whole story is that they get so sick of the whole institution, they just up and quit. Like in past.
Yeah, maybe.
That's what I want to think anyway.
Yeah.
But, and next up, The Last of Us, the HBO TV show. I played Last of Us Part 1 and 2 and love both of them. They're great games, amazing, with great characters and great storytelling in spite of what a few neckbeard assholes on the internet would like to tell you. We now know who they're going to be casting in that show. Pedro Pascal will be playing Joel, and Bella Ramsey will be playing Ellie.
Pedro Pascal is going to be escorting another kid. You might know Bella Ramsey from Game of Thrones as Lyanna, the badass girl that kicks a little bit of ass there at the end.
She basically becomes like the protagonist halfway through the first game, pretty much. And this isn't really a spoiler because that game's been out for a while. Joel gets really hurt and is kind of like, you know, put in traction for a little while. So Ellie basically has to take over as like the main breadwinner, whatever, you know, hunting their food and everything. And of course that ties into the second when she becomes the main protagonist and just ruthlessly murders a lot of people.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this show kind of tackles that stuff. Because it seems like with the show, they could definitely slow things down a little bit. Because the first game is very much town to town to town to town. Not really taking too much of a break there. So they could definitely slow some things down. Maybe do like two seasons for the first game if they want. There's no real point in rushing.
They could actually theoretically do three, because there's basically three big story arcs that happen in that game. So
yeah,
and plus there's like a lot of stuff that they don't really explore enough in the first game that they could very easily explore more thoroughly in a TV show format. So yeah,
are you ready to see that outbreak scene?
Oh yeah.
In live action.
I have not had enough nightmare fuel. Oh, God. The way that fucking prologue ends. God damn. I'm going to have to live through that again.
Yep.
Oh, boy. More casting stories. The Borderlands movie. Well, we now know who's going to be playing Claptrap. And those you don't remember, Gearbox has been having issues with the original voice actor for Claptrap. Or rather, the other way around. Because Gearbox operates a very shady fucking company. And, well, anyway. Point is, for the Borderlands movie, they decided Claptrap's going to be voiced by Jack Black.
Nice.
This is a pretty good casting. And they got an interesting cast for this movie. Cate Blanchett is voicing, or playing the siren, I think it is. What's her name? I forget the character is Lilith. Cate Blanchett's playing Lilith. Kevin Hart is portraying Roland, the soldier, which is like he does not have the size that you would expect out of that character. So that'll be interesting. And Jamie Lee Curtis is being voiced as cast as Tanis, the archaeologist that is working on
Pandora. Who goes completely fucking bonkers, like, long before you meet her.
That's sort of a very big, big name cast for a Borderlands movie, which nobody has any expectations to be good. It's being directed by Eli Roth.
Kind of a coin toss there.
Yeah.
Next up, the My Little Pony movie is going straight to Netflix. Now, let's see. I want to make sure, like, what specific version this is.
This is the new one.
Ah.
It was going to come out in theaters on September 24th, but now that it's skipping theaters, they have no date for it, just later this year, I guess.
So I guess this is not related to Friendship is Magic. This is supposed to be like kickstarting the next generation, I guess.
Something like that. It's Paramount Pictures is the one that made this.
Yeah, because the problem here, the article doesn't really go into a lot of details, but
yeah.
Well, yeah, we'll see what comes of that. And here's one that people have been kind of, they're not really sure what to make of. So the CW is getting a Powerpuff Girls series, but it's a live action series where the girls are now grown up and they resent their childhood.
Yeah, it's a weird premise.
Yeah, doesn't really make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, it very much seems like a CW thing.
Yeah, I mean, this is Archie, freaking, you know.
Yeah, where they potentially have to reunite to save the world again. But yeah, it's writers and executive producers Heather Regnier and Diablo Cody.
Diablo Cody.
Yeah, so we'll see how that turns out. I guess CW is also working on a reboot of the USA Network series, The 4400. Mm-hmm. Which is about 4,400 overlooked, undervalued, or otherwise marginalized people who vanished without a trace over the last 100 years, all return in an instant, having not aged a day and with no memory of what happened to them. As the government races to analyze the potential threat contained in the story, the 4,400 themselves must grapple with the fact that they've been returned with a few upgrades, increasing likelihood they were all brought back now for a specific reason, which they've been working on this for a while. What else? There's Naomi, which is like a series from Ava DuVernay. Mm. So that's a thing they're also working on. So yeah, they got some interesting stuff coming up.
Yeah, I guess. All right. Oh yeah, here's another story. Face Off. Remember the old, that old movie? With Travolta and Cage. It's like, it's a, God, I forgot, who's the director of that? I can't remember. It's the guy. John Woo, like one of the most over-the-top directors ever. Mainstream. Yeah.
Like at the height of those two actors' popularity, I guess.
And the movie is just insane.
Yeah.
And let's be honest, I didn't care because I still freaking loved it.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. And it does not... It's ridiculous and embraces it. But we now know that Face Off is actually getting a sequel, and it's being helmed by the same guy who directed Godzilla vs. Kong.
Yeah. It was reported it was like a reboot or remake, which didn't really make any sense, but yeah, it'd be weird if they do it with, both of those guys now.
Well, I mean,
I don't know how it makes sense story-wise, because they both go their own way.
They both get their faces back, so.
Yeah. And
I mean, don't forget to have them in that role again. Like, I mean, there are ways you can write that. I'm not necessarily completely writing it off because, I mean, we saw with like Cobra Kai that you can take that kind of old dumb story and you know, with a little talent, you can very easily expand it into something worthwhile. But
it's all about execution.
Yeah, pretty much.
And this is one where maybe the sequel isn't about them taking their face off and swapping them. Maybe it's just a follow-up. Mm-hmm. But it's also right in Nick Cage's wheelhouse at this point with what he's working on. Because I think one of his movies is coming out here pretty soon, which is basically him being the guy that gets hired into Five Nights at Freddy's.
Yeah.
Where the animatronics come alive and has to fight him. There's a trailer that came out of it like a couple months ago, but I just saw it now. There's like a recent clip that came out of him fighting a like ostrich robot thing. The trailer goes some places.
Yeah.
Especially they get to the point of like, oh, I'm not trapped here with them. They're trapped here with me. Sort of thing. Just like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
All the cliches.
All the cliches.
You would think they wouldn't do, but that's Nick Cage right now.
He kind of embraced it. He knows he's in the he's in on the joke, and you know, it works.
Yeah.
But anyway. Then we got the announcement that the Sonic the Hedgehog 2 movie is coming out next year. We all knew that this was going to happen after the success of the first one, even though that movie could have failed on so many levels even before it released. And they somehow managed to snatch victory from the jaws of defeat at the very last second.
Yeah.
And will forever be known as the last movie I saw in a real theater before coronavirus. You know, BC before Corona.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's true for a lot of people. Which is weird. And yeah, they revealed the logo, which has the two on it with the
two with
tails. Nice.
Tails is Tails. Yep. Because, I mean, he...
Because that was teased at the end of the...
He shows movie. Up at the Stinger. And then everybody in the theater lost their goddamn mind.
Yep. So, yeah, that has a tentative date right now of April 8th, 2022. Yeah. Still about 2 years or a year or so off.
Seriously, go on YouTube and look for all the reactions of people in the theater when that spot happens and just listen to them lose it.
I'm good.
And we know that Knuckles is going to be showing up at some point because, you know, the Echidna has already showed up in the first movie. So.
Yeah, right at the beginning. Maybe that'll be Sonic the Hedgehog 3, just like the games.
Well, I mean, that's how it works. Tails didn't show up until Sonic 2.
And they insert Sonic Hedgehog 2 into Sonic the Hedgehog 3 and unlock exclusive content. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, no, actually, that was Sonic and Knuckles.
I don't remember any of those games anymore.
It's all kind of a blur. I admit it. And then finally, to wrap up everything, we got a bunch of trailers from the Super Bowl. And as far as like the Super Bowl itself, we all know how it ended. Again, Tom Brady won again, and I'm furious about it again. Not because I'm a football person, but because I hate Tom Brady and I want to see him suffer. But anyway, amongst other things, we saw the trailer for Coming to America, the sequel to Coming to America.
Change 2 to the number 2. But yeah, that is only on Prime Video, March 5th.
Yep.
Seems pretty good for what it's doing.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, not really too much there, but they have a pretty good cast there.
Then we got F9, which is...
Fast and Furious 9, which got a little bit more stuff in there from the last... since the last trailer they showed off. Some ridiculous stunts there. Like a car getting pulled through a building.
Yep.
Like a magnetic thing to take out a truck, I guess. So they're going all out on these stunts. That's not sure what time frame they got for that release. I think they don't have one yet. It just says in theaters soon. Whatever that means.
Yeah. And let's see, we also got the Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Yeah, well, it looks like we're pretty good. It stars March 19th on Disney Plus. And yeah, for people that know more about those characters in the Marvel universe, there's some villains and such that are shown off that I have no idea who they are. Mm. But the people that would know seem to be excited.
Mm-hmm. All right. And then we got Nobody.
Yeah, which, let's see, you know, Bob Odenkirk does a lot of good stuff in Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul.
Mm-hmm.
What if he was John Wick? That's basically this movie. Who decides to fight back against thieves that broke into his house. And I guess he doesn't really do anything. Disappoints his family. And so he reacts by just becoming an action hero, I guess.
Basically.
And this is directed by the same person that directed Hardcore Henry, which is a weird whole thing. But it's also, the script was written by Derek Kolstad, the narrative architect of the John Wick franchise. Also has Christopher Lloyd in it as his father for some reason. So, you know, very silly movie, but it looks like it could be pretty good. I'm not sure when that is out. It says April 2nd. So that'll be out here at some point. Probably not that soon. Maybe just digital, but Who knows at this point?
And then we've got Old, which is
the new M. Night Shyamalan movie.
Oh boy, which means once again we got a 50-50 chance of it being surprisingly good or utter shit.
And it's these people vacationing on a beach that find out that somehow it is causing them to age rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
Based on a graphic novel called Sandcastle. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
That's that. That's out in July. Mm-hmm. Movie about people getting old.
Mm-hmm.
I like the URL though. It's www.old.movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And finally, we got a trailer for the upcoming Disney epic Raya and the Last Dragon. Or Raya and the Last Dragon. And this is actually a movie I'm looking forward to because it actually looks really good.
Yeah, you're going to have to pony up to watch it. It is a premium Disney Plus movie. So you have to pay a fee to watch it alongside your subscription fee for it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if there's a price on that yet, but it might be like $30 to see it. Or you probably have to wait a few months and you can watch it for free on Disney Plus.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah, it looks pretty good.
And apparently they went to a lot of trouble to actually like look at the various Asian cultures this time around. So much so that apparently it looks like they've got some cultures represented most people wouldn't recognize. But anyway. So yeah, that is the show for tonight. I think we've got everything we got for a show. So I would like to all of our listeners, if you got a question, comment, or something you would want us to read on the air, you can get in touch with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got it linked to you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at Google Play, RSS, archive.org, or pretty much any kind of podcast aggregator you can think of. And if we're not on there, well, just wait a few minutes. It's not like you're leaving your house right now anyway. So with that, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, and for Teresa Sammons and Chris Elogi, good night, sleep tight, and yeah, things are about to get really interesting.